Welcome to CoCurious, which is a community of learning professionals who are reimagining learning and financial sustainability. My name is David McLean, and I founded Learning Advisory to help academic and corporate education providers better balance learning excellence and their sustained financial performance. Our mission is simple: ensure that every cent spent on learning maximizes both the educational experience and an organization's bottom line. CoCurious provides an insight into this challenge and how we at Learning Advisory provide the support to address it. Colin, welcome. Recently, we shared a meal and you asked a brilliant question. You asked, is learning still relevant? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's quite a big question, isn't it? It just occurs to me that, I mean, obviously my answer is yes, of course, learning is still relevant. But maybe the nature of learning has changed a little over time, really driven by our rapidly changing environment, rapidly changing world, the difficulty in predicting what's going to happen next. A big reminder was COVID in 2020, you know, January and February, everyone was ticking along quite nicely. In March, the whole world closed down. We had to isolate, we had to adapt, we had to change plans, we had to be very flexible and learn to communicate like this through technology rather than being in the room together. So it just strikes me that with rapid change, the nature of learning has to change as well. Perhaps, I mean, arguably in sort of decades gone by, the world changed a little less rapidly, one can argue. And it was easier to kind of look down the road into the future and sort of predict a little more accurately what was going to happen, although obviously not too precisely. But I think that's all changed. I think we've become far more myopic, short-sighted. We can't see that far into the future anymore with any confidence in terms of what the world is going to present to us and what we're going to have to deal with. So I'm also reminded, I recall a lecture actually that I attended at the Sports Science Institute in Cape Town, and Tim Noakes was speaking, and there were medical students in the audience, and what he was saying was, you know, learning has to be lifelong was part of the message there. And he was saying that to be qualified as a medical doctor, you go through years and years and years of learning and training and practice, et cetera, et cetera. And then you get your qualification. And then probably within 3 to 5 years of qualifying, something like 80% of what you learned will no longer be true. And it just struck me at that point in time that, wow, you know, so we spend all of this time garnering knowledge in whatever profession we happen to be in or whatever area of work we strive to be competent in. And we think we've got it. We think we've kind of nailed it. We think we... Some of us anyway, you know, define self as experts. I don't like that term, but some people set themselves up that way. And it just reminds me that we've got to be a little humble around this, that what we think we know, maybe very soon will go out of date and it's no longer true. I think the nature of learning perhaps has changed, partly because of a rapidly changing world, because the frontiers of knowledge are being pushed forward daily. You know, science is never finished. It's always an ongoing process, for example, new discoveries, new insights. And it's true in all walks of life, I think. So it's about adaptation for me, I think. Being able to be flexible, adaptable, understand how best I learn and how I can maximize the efficiency and effectiveness of my ability to learn and to do it, you know, rapidly and usefully, and being able to unlearn what I thought I knew is no longer true. So let it go, replace it with something else. So for me, yes, absolutely. Learning is still relevant. We have to be a lot more adaptable and be able to flex and adjust and be lighter on our feet. And so the speed of learning and unlearning, I think, has changed a lot.
So when am I qualified? Not when I say so, but when others, and particularly people that I do work with or would like to work with, deem me to be and qualified beyond academic qualifications or certification, sort of technical certifications alone.
Learning becomes more important than knowledge in a strange way, because, you know, what I think I know, I might have to let go and replace with new information. And so it's the ability to do that, the ability to let go what I think I know and replace it with something new and do that fairly easily and comfortably without difficulty, actually. So it's that idea of plasticity of the brain and this ability to open new channels, new neural pathways, close down other neural pathways that are no longer serving us, perhaps. That kind of more efficient use of our brains, actually, it speaks to me about this. So I guess in a way, and again, I'm not trying to decry knowledge, perhaps the more important thing is learning, you know, the process of learning, as opposed to just the gathering of knowledge.
I've never thought of it like that. And while research is progressing and building upon existing knowledge, the ever-expanding one's ability to learn and by association unlearn. I've got such a vivid picture when you say learning mindset is to approach it being light on our feet. I love that. It's a beautiful thing to approach it in a far less possessive and territorial way to the tradition of gaining and imparting knowledge.
I guess there's another sort of deeper aspect for me as well when I think about learning. Again, the focus is very much these days on data, information, numbers, you know, facts, figures, that sort of thing, which at one level is fine. But the bigger gap for me, I've got to be honest, the way I look at the world is wisdom. So we've got so much information available to us these days, it's actually overwhelming. You know, the advent of the internet has just blown that out of all kinds of proportion. It's truly overwhelming. I mean, there is just so much information out there on pretty much any topic you choose to look at. There is a danger that we focus on the acquisition of knowledge, more data, more information, more of that, and lose the idea of wisdom. Because wisdom, I think, is at a deeper level. And it has more to do, for me anyway, with the idea of meaning. So perhaps numbers tell a story, but what does that mean for us? You know, the data, the information, the facts that we gather tell us something, but is it just about regurgitating that, you know, repeating it, putting it on paper when we complete an exam and we get a mark for it? It feels at one level a little superficial, but if you start to take it to a deeper level and ask, well, what does that mean? You know, what actually does this new information mean for us? How do we apply it? How can it add value at a deeper level? I think that's a different conversation that I'm suspecting sometimes is missed, particularly with students who are keen to pass an exam at the end of the year, and educators as well. It's about getting as many students through the program as possible and getting as many up to the pass mark as possible. One thing that concerns me is wisdom. Wisdom in leadership, whether it's political leadership, corporate leadership, leadership in education, we mustn't lose that concept either.
What you remind us of is that data in of itself is not useful. It's what we can learn from it and how we can use it through what we have learned from it.
Exactly. And again, if one takes it to that level, there starts to be an ethical component to it as well, because what we do with it could be useful and add value and be useful to humanity and to the world at large, or it can be more sort of selfish orientation, which might, you know, we might not take care of the ecology, if you will, if you want to use that term in the broader sense, so that it becomes damaging. And I think we've seen lots of that happening in the world in the past and recently, where the application or the use of information, the use of knowledge could be damaging, actually, to others. And that's, for me, again, it's got to be tempered by a deeper wisdom and an ethical approach to the application of information and knowledge.
Something that you brought to my attention in the context of the Learn Smartly, learning preferences and non-preferences instrument is that one of the measures is influence. And just because I score highly in influence, it doesn't denote a good influence, which one might assume just at a first glance. And to your point, interrogating one's influence should be a lifelong endeavor, because the more one does that, the more wisdom one will garner, greater situational awareness. I hosted Frank De Beer, who's director of the Arbinger Institute in South Africa. I want to read out three questions that his organization uses in their work. The first is, am I willing and able to lead by example? The second is, am I curious enough to understand where I am part of the problem? And the third one is, am I curious enough to understand where I impact others? My assumption is that if one is working with that kind of reflection, the likelihood of one expanding one's situational awareness in the context of self, others, and ever any context is probably pretty good to build a greater wisdom and be more useful and kind in the world. In your work as an executive coach who works with many very senior people with huge responsibilities in their roles, have you experienced differences or changes in learning design and the way people are learning or want to learn?
It's interesting questions. I think an ever-growing sense over the last probably 20 years or so of the importance of learning. I think it's always been in the conversation, but it seems to me to be more serious now, that whole approach. Peter Senge wrote about the learning organization, but there are very few organizations that I've come across that I could call a learning organization. Learning has been seen for a long time. This is why we use the concept of personal mastery in our Learn Smartly approach. Learning has been seen to be a driver of success. This is a whole thing about that came out of Peter Senge's work, the learning organization. You know, those organizations that actively and intentionally learn from their own experience, the sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly of experience, you know, and particularly the errors and the mistakes that we make, which we always will. Do we choose to blame somebody for making that choice and that decision that turned out badly? Or do we go into a different space and start to understand what went wrong? What can we do to fix it? And more importantly, what can we learn from this so that we don't have to make this same error again into the future? It's a very different conversation, the learning conversation. And you do find, I mean, the research is out there that those organizations that go the learning conversation route over time tend to be more successful than the organizations that go the blaming route. So there's evidence for this, and it's been around for a long time. I think there's more real awareness of it now. Another thing that I've noticed is, you know, the advent of almost a corporate university, the corporates, large organizations building into the fabric of the organization a center of learning, which rarely used to be the case. And it's starting to be a growing entity now, which in a way is a little bit of competition to the traditional academic university route of education. So that's a change as well. So it says to me that the corporates, the business world is taking learning a little more seriously. The advent of sort of nano learning, short, sharp bursts of learning experience, as opposed to lengthy periods of time on an academic course, for example, there seems to be a shift in that direction. Just-in-time learning, on-the-job learning, these kinds of things. Even the advent of coaching, which has exploded over the last 20 years globally, is about learning. It's about guiding people into their lives, into their specific individual roles in an organization, and helping that learning transition into the real world, the practical world. So I'm seeing more emphasis in that, you know, quite honestly, which I think is a great thing. And this need for this idea of just-in-time learning, when things change, can we learn rapidly? Can we learn preferably in advance of? But if we have to learn on the fly in the moment, can we do it? How do we make learning more available to a wider group of people? Technology perhaps can do that for us. But I'm thinking in the South African context, there's lots of people who don't have the same access to learning experiences, perhaps more formalized learning experiences. How do we do that? How do we use technology in a way that gets learning out to a greater group of people, greater number of people? Because if we're not careful, that divide is going to increase. Those who can afford learning and those sort of formal learning and those who cannot. So how do we deal with that? I think there's some massive challenges, certainly in South Africa and elsewhere in the world as well. It's not just endemic in South Africa. There are changes happening. I think the conversation of learning is in the air more than it used to be. There seems to be more of a commitment to learning in the workplace than perhaps there used to be. And that's encouraging.
You are co-founder and co-owner, along with Jaime Gordon, of INEA, the INEA International Group, which is a thriving learning organization in the truest sense of the term. So what one prompt or piece of guidance can you give academic and corporate education providers to better balance learning excellence and their sustained financial performance?
I think there's more integration needed between the sort of learning space and the practical work environment space. I think somehow we need to really fully integrate that. I think things I mentioned earlier, things seem to be moving in the right direction. But how do we absolutely make learning part of the fabric of an organization? The financial benefits to a large extent, but the success story of an organization, how does that link to a successful learning journey? How does the learning story integrate with business success, which is can be measured in different ways, profitability, market share, et cetera, et cetera? How do we make that successful story integrate with a successful learning journey story as well? So I think it's got to do with the stories that we tell, the stories that leaders tell, particularly in corporate organizations, and to make more of that, to really commit to it financially as well as personally, sort of leading learning into an organization. That is starting to happen, but I think there's still a way to go. As far as the academic space is concerned, which I'm less directly involved with, I can see potentially sort of a threat appearing to the traditional academic institutions in terms of partly relevance, usefulness, and practical application in teaching people how to learn. So again, we mentioned earlier, perhaps it's less about the knowledge, but more about how do I acquire it, the process of learning. How do we teach people to learn most effectively? That's the gap that we saw when we introduced the Learn Smartly approach. How can we help people optimize their ability to learn and unlearn rapidly and efficiently and effectively? That needs to be an integral part of education, I would say, from early on right through the whole process.
Less emphasis on knowledge and greater emphasis on learning how to learn.
If you look at the world, increasingly we're focused on outcomes, objectives, deliverables. But that's the end of the process, isn't it? If you look at the way many corporates look at the world, it really is about the numbers, the deliverables, the measurements of success. And I guess it's true in the academic world as well. How many students are succeeding? What are the pass marks? How are we doing? But if we want to optimize the output, surely we've got to look really at that process, the process that delivers those numbers at the end of the day. How do we get people to be the best that they can be so that they can produce the numbers, the deliverables, the whatever it is we're trying to make here? How do we do that? That's an interesting conversation to really have. And a big part of it has got to be learning and creating an environment where learning can happen. It's about how do we get people to be at their very best, to optimize their abilities in terms of their effectiveness, to be the best human beings that they can be, whatever roles they fulfill. That's the noble outcome of learning.
Our mission at Learning Advisory is to help academic and corporate learning providers balance learning excellence and sustain financial performance. So if this conversation resonated with you, check out the other episodes on CoCurious. Visit us online at learningadvisory.com and let's keep learning, let's keep sharing, and let's keep holding each other to account for the advancement of ourselves and practicing what we teach.